Yes, on a Friday. Get Tom in here. We got a lot of news. I know Hannah. Hey, Tom, how are
Happy Blue Friday.
Happy Blue Friday. Here we go. By the way, Andrew, does the eagle poop today?
Poop-a-doo, poop-a-doo.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
Right, we all get paid. I got to ask Ursula. Why is Ursula always knows when we get paid? Why is that?
Because she's mom.
She's also in management. By the way, Ursula.
Wait. No, I'm not.
You used to be in management.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, I took this off your desk. Do you mind?
It's there for the taking.
Almond Roca?
Yeah, yeah, why not?
Wow. Classic.
Yeah. Way to go, T-Town. Let's get Hannah in here. big story. Not really, but we'll make
it's
it a big,
always
big story.
It's always a big story when there's an AP preview of the upcoming legislative session.
It's always a big story when Hannah's here. I don't understand.
So right. Every year there's the AP session. The reporters sit there dutifully with their notepads. They raise their hand. They get recognized. It's normally policy sort of stuff, right?
It's policy stuff. There's different panels. So we had a leadership panel, which had, you know, your the House Minority Leader, the incoming Speaker, Lori Jenkins, was there, which was a big deal this year. And then we had a second panel on homelessness. And then the third hour is always the governor comes in and says a little bit about what he wants to talk about and then takes some questions from the reporters. And now, normally it's tame. The highlight is always Rachel, who puts this on over at the AP, brings some very awesome donuts. You can check my Twitter account and see pictures of those.
That's normally the highlight. No,
that's one of the favorite parts for me.
All right.
But it's your chance to really say, okay, what can we expect? Where do you each, you know, Republicans, Democrats, whomever, House, Senate, where do you guys land on this? What do you think we're going to see this session? What are the priorities, things like that. So the Governor Inslee came in, and obviously we know from his budget proposal, homelessness is his big issue. Of course, there's a lot of questions about transportation, given I-976, $30 car tabs, all, you know, tied up in the courts. And so Tim Iman was there. And I honestly can't recall. I go every year. I can't recall if he's usually there. But I noticed him right away yesterday. And he sat there through the first couple of hours. And then when the governor got there, the governor started talking about how he is holding this certain amount of money back from car tabs that are still being collected in case I-976 is upheld in court and we have to refund as the state money back to people who paid these car tabs. And that's when Tim Iman decided to jump up and have his question, reminder that he is not media.
But I don't have to answer your questions, Tim. Tim, I'm not answering your questions. Let me make a suggestion to you, Tim. You need to sit down. Just don't steal that chair, okay? Just sit down on that chair and don't steal it. We're not allowing you to disrupt a press conference so that I can answer a question to the press. The press is a professional core of answering their questions. Thank you very much. Please leave the chair when you leave. Thanks very much. Next question.
That, of course, a bit of a zinger from the governor.
Three times.
Get
the laugh. And bombed a third time, second and first.
Because Tim Iman, if you don't recall, had this chair that he stole from Office Depot or wherever it was last year. All of that. So $70 chair. So at that point, Tim Iman leaves the room. But the question he was trying to ask was, are you putting all of this money that's being collected from car tabs into this escrow account that you're saying that you are? In case we have to do refunds. Now, the governor wasn't going to engage and answer his question there, but here's what's going on. The governor is taking the money from the state portion of the car tabs and putting that over here in case we need to refund that money. The rest of the money, the Department of Licensing is shelling out to the various cities, counties, as they need it, and that'll be something they'll have to deal with if I-976 is, in fact, upheld in court. But that was the question he was trying to get to in the excitement of the day.
Mm-hmm. And the answer?
I just gave it to you.
Yes. Sorry,
portion of the money is, in fact, being in an account over here.
Got it.
Cities and counties are getting their money.
I just missed the first part. I didn't know if that's what that's what Inslee had said or that's what Hannah had said. I trust Hannah. Gotcha. Thank you, Hannah.
There you go. You're very welcome. So beyond that, the other more controversial, additional controversial issue that was brought up was, what are we going to do about Representative Matt Shea? At this point, the session starts Monday, and he's expected to be there. He's kind of like a lawmaker without a home at the moment because House Republicans have suspended him. He has no access to resources aside from his legislative aide, I think. Incoming House Speaker Lori Jenkins made her position quite clear.
Matt Shea should resign. And if he does not resign, he should be expelled.
Now, that's easier said than done, though. Mm-hmm.
But also, she's a Democrat.
Yes.
Yes. And so I think it would behoove the Republicans. They're the ones that should be expelling him.
But it'll be up to the House. The entire House would have to, a two-thirds majority would be required for the whole House to make that vote. And we saw swift action when this report, of course, anybody who's not familiar, came out just in December suggesting that Matt Shea is responsible for domestic terrorism and has taken part, an active part in that. And that's, we had, there's been a lot of talk about Representative Shea for several years. House Minority Leader J.T. Wilcox has always said, let's wait and see what happens. And then they finally got this investigation. Mm-hmm. And he was quite swift, came out, suspended him from the caucus, removed him from all committees and all resources, essentially. And he said any influence he had, this is what J.T. Wilcox told me at the time, any influence Matt Shea had in the legislature is now gone.
Okay.
It's just gone. So he was there yesterday as well, Representative Wilcox, and he said, he reminded everyone that, yes, we did this. We suspended him from the caucus. But when it comes to expelling, minus a conviction for domestic terrorism, mm-hmm. it's like taking away the vote of the people, right? So that there's a bit of hesitation there is kind of my takeaway as far as what to do with Matt Shea moving forward.
So you make him absolutely powerless, so that the voters go, well, why should we put him in there? He can't get anything done for us.
And that would be, I think, the idea. Okay. But I've seen reports in recent days saying that this whole thing has made him more popular
yeah,
among
that
his
yesterday
base.
On the Tom McCurley show. Yeah, maybe you weren't listening. That
it's one time I'm not listening.
She can
and it's
read Daddy
I'm in
Westmead
the AP preview.
Like we do.
At any rate, he is up for re-election. So we'll see how this plays out. I know it is a priority for everyone to try to get some resolution to this. So that was some of the more controversial things. There was also discussion about homelessness. Again, as that was one of the governor's priorities. He wants to take $300 million or so out of the rainy day fund for emergency shelter for the homelessness, treat this mm-hmm. as an emergency. One of the more interesting parts of the conversation yesterday is in each panel, I believe it was Austin Jenkins, a reporter, who was asking, why all of a sudden is this now being treated as an emergency? Why are we taking money out of the rainy day fund? Why, for instance, did you spend all this money on free college for everyone last year? And why was that more important than let's make homelessness an emergency? Didn't really hear much of a solid answer on that other than all of these things are equally important priorities. This is the session for homelessness. Mm-hmm. The issue is that it sounds like there might be some difficulty on pulling that money from the rainy day fund. Not everyone, including the new incoming House Speaker, Democratic Lori Jenkins, is on board, and she doesn't necessarily think there's the 2/3 required vote to get that money out of the rainy day fund mm-hmm. to address this. She would like, and others would like, to see a more comprehensive approach to the homelessness issue, housing, permanent supportive housing, things like that. So that'll be an interesting debate to watch moving forward. Transportation also, what do we do about the roughly $500 million in the current transportation budget? That there's a hole in it now because of 976. Mm-hmm. And what the Republicans want to do is use the vehicle sales tax, right? That's money that you pay every time you buy a car in the state. It goes into the general fund. They say that can easily be pulled out and we can use that to backfill. And then also for future transportation funding, there's not that much of an appetite by the governor or many on the Democratic side for that, because it comes out of the general fund. So then you're taking money from mental health and various other things.
Okay. And most importantly, how were the donuts?
They were so good. I have to tell you, I tried to do one of those things where you cut like a little corner off and I could not separate it. I don't know what this thing was that I had. It was dough and it was chocolate and it was like cream inside. It was very, very good. It was thank you very much, Rachel.
Couldn't cut it, Tom. That's the headline.
I had to take the whole half.
Anna Scott unable to cut donut in half. All right. Don't forget Tim Iman, leave the chair.
He did, in fact, leave the chair.
I know he did, but it's just sad to see the governor squirreling around on a punchline. The reason I was unable to hear Hannah's report is because this just came down, Tom, which is actually our next story. This comes from the Wall Street Journal. House to send articles of impeachment to the Senate next week. So Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House will move forward next week on sending the articles of impeachment to the Senate after withholding them in an effort to secure guarantee that the president's trial would include witnesses. To send the article to the Senate, the House must vote on a resolution that names impeachment managers, delivers evidence to the chamber. The vote would transmit the articles and automatically trigger the Senate trial. So that is...
Yeah, sounds like they're going to go on Tuesday. She's going to meet with the caucus and then probably send them over. They wanted to get them over. Then they're about to go. Congress is about to take a week-long recess at the end of next week. So they can mull that over then.
There she is with the articles of impeachment. She just explains why she hadn't sent them over. Well, we've got that already. Reporters asked if she's willing to hold the articles indefinitely. So all this is old news. And then Adam Smith saying the other day, Adam Smith in Washington, you know, we should do this, move this forward. So did Dianne Feinstein. Said, listen, you know, if it's that urgent, send it. If it's not, don't send it. Let's move on. We've got other business to take care of. Adam Smith said basically the same thing. And then a couple hours later said, no, I misspoke. He didn't misspeak. Nancy must have gotten to put some sort of pressure on him or something in order to get him to remove his spinal cord and gonads. So it does move forward now. Yesterday in the Senate, I think it was Holly from Missouri and a few others, 10 of them jumped in and said, tell you what, why don't we do this? We bring a bill up, if you support it, got a bunch of sponsors, that if you don't bring the thing to us in 25 days, it's null and void, and we don't even have to bring it to the Senate floor.
That's right. It's all just a little titting and tatting, you know, for each other. I do think the question is, does Nancy Pelosi have egg in her face because she didn't get the Senate to reveal the rules of the road or not? I think, in retrospect, it worked politically in that it kept this issue of should we have witnesses in the news for a couple of weeks longer than it might have if she'd delivered them in early December. But beyond that, it'll just continue as expected, I think.
She caved. She didn't want to do impeachment, but she realized that the power of the people on the far left of part of the party and the money and where it was going, she needed to do something. So she caved on the thing.
First
and
off,
on.
She did not cave. That is a hilarious. If the Ukrainian business hadn't shown up, she wouldn't have caved. There was a minority. There was a clear majority of Democrats that didn't want to do the impeachment. And if the Ukrainian thing hadn't fallen in the Democrats lap, there wouldn't have been an impeachment.
And what were the two charges where he broke the law?
Obstruction of Congress and abuse of power.
Okay, right. Nancy Pelosi felt that those were two good charges to bring forward. I thought bribery was the one, but we never brought that. I thought the quid pro quo, but that wasn't brought forward. So it's abuse of power is, which is the fact that he didn't want his people to go testify. That's executive. That would go to the court. And then the second one was obstruction. Right.
No, abuse of power is using $400 million in aid that was already granted by Congress for this. He was using that as leverage.
Which he's allowed to do.
He's not. Well, okay.
He's allowed to hold it up, Tom.
We know how you would vote.
No. He's allowed to hold it up. He's allowed to hold it up.
He's not allowed to use that as a bribe, in effect, as political leverage to get his own personal bidding done.
Right. So if it was a bribe.
That's what he's in trouble
for. It was a bribe, and they told us they had evidence of a bribe. Why wasn't that one of the articles of impeachment?
Because abuse of power encompasses that. It's the same thing that they went after Nixon on, and Nixon ended up resigning as a result.
Abuse of power, they're saying, is that the president would not let his people go testify.
No, that's the contempt of Congress one.
Abuse of power. So Nancy ends up with this thing finally moving forward. Yes, she has egg on her face. Because she was the one that said she didn't want to do it. But then she also said, we need to do this so quickly. It's so important that we move this thing so rapidly because we have to defend the Constitution. Then she held up on it, continued to hold up on it, got enough pressure from people like Dianne Feinstein and some other Democrats in the Senate saying, come on, this is ridiculous. Let's go forwards. She folds. She realizes it's like that classic cartoon of the guy's holding the gun to his own head saying, you know, stop or I'll shoot. So she's holding herself hostage on it. The big question I saw, interesting
piece. Thank you for Fox News version of that. That is not exactly what happened, John.
I'm giving you my version of it from reading the Wall Street Journal. I don't even have television, Tom, so I don't even watch Fox. I don't even go to that, although that is the number one cable news outlet. The thing is interesting is Maureen Dowd brings up an interesting piece, and other people talk about who takes Nancy Pelosi's place. When Nancy Pelosi is an old gal, if she decides to get out, who is the next person in line in the Democratic Party that understands the nuance of far, far left socialists that you have in place? Then mainstream, if you even have any mainstream people, who would be the next person in line to run that house instead of Nancy Pelosi?
Most of us don't know our own representative, let alone the national roster of Democrats. So
I guess Maureen Dowd needed a column. She needed a column.
Yes. Well, it's a good question in that you're asking, so she's the old guard. When is the new guard going to take over? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's always been a Speaker of the House. There are no shortage of candidates.
This is so crazy. I can't believe it. When Jeffrey Epstein killed himself.
A recent 60 Minutes broadcast shows the New York jail cell where Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself last August. But now, there's new focus on the suicide attempt Epstein made weeks before he died. Video of the cell exterior where Epstein first tried to end his life was sent to federal investigators and restored last week. But on Thursday, prosecutors said it's the wrong video. In a letter, federal prosecutors said the jail inadvertently preserved video from the wrong tier at the jail. And as a result, video from outside the defendant's cell no longer exists. CBS News legal analyst Ricky Kleeman.
When I read this letter, I had to reread it because I said, this just can't be happening. This is madness.
Nicholas Tartaglione was Epstein's cellmate at the Metropolitan Correctional Center for the weeks between Epstein's July arrest and his first suicide attempt. Bruce Barquette is Tartaglione's attorney.
It is the worst facility, jail or prison, that I've been to in 35 years of practicing law.
The missing jail cell video could reignite speculation of a cover-up as the detention facility continues to be...
Reignite? Reignite, meaning it went out and they're reigniting it. It's still going. It's blazing hot.
Under fire for multiple failures before Epstein died in custody.
When you've got videotape disappearing, cameras not working, guards allegedly not being where they're supposed to be, it's no wonder that Jeffrey Epstein is dead.
These things can happen, right?
These things can happen, but they all shouldn't happen in one place.
Ugh. Bingo. That is outrageous. We don't know if the video of the first attempted suicide is of ultimately any value, but still, you cannot send to federal prosecutors, oh, I'm sorry, that was the wrong video.
Wrong floor.
And then they, the wrong floor, and so they ended up destroying everything else. It just, you know, I have faith that the investigation is going on, that they'll figure out what happened. The problem is that even if it was incompetence, it's so many incompetencies, you know, piling up on incompetencies that it does allow people to be, what?
So you do believe it's incompetency and not some sort of treachery?
I mean, I tend to, although this one just seems ridiculous. So
at what point does the shoe drop for you and you realize, he didn't kill himself. Hillary did. I mean, what point do you realize?
Yeah, that's right.
Or Prince Andrew did, or Bill Clinton did.
Clearly, Donald Trump has all the
powers
at his own. And I think he got a Ukrainian, you know, insider to do the nasty.
That's what Rachel Maddow is saying anyway. All right. We're never going to get to those other two stories. We've got to move the show around because the guy we're supposed to talk to go behind enemy lines, we normally do this at 9:30, but he's too big for us now. So we've got to do him at 9:45.
That's correct.
We're not going to have as much time for cuckoo-ness. Is everybody okay with that? You all right with that?
We got to
make a decision. How much information do we do, and how much cuckoo do we do?
We'll keep the 30 section short, so the 45 section will be bigger.
Well, I'm sure the advertisers will appreciate that little move. All right, fine. Still better have some cuckoo in on this. We'll be right back. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage. That's the number that you need, 1-888-778-KIEL. Experience the outstanding customer service that I have experienced when you deal with the good people there at Keel Mortgage. And by the way, you do have that. Thank you. Agile. Please pick up the phone and call Keel. Not that number I just gave you, but a different one to find out the color of Laura Keel's hair. It's all part of the tradition of the Seahawks. Also, the tradition is we go behind enemy lines to talk to the Homer in that town about what they can expect when the Seahawks either come to town or when they come here to be defeated at CenturyLink Field.
A lot on the line this weekend.
Oh, my God. I had dinner with my son last night. And I said, Rod, let's talk Green Bay for a minute. I can't, Dad. I just want to eat. I just want to get a good night's sleep. I'm like,
why? Because he's going to be
going in for a lung transplant the next day. He's like, I don't want to get too nervous about it. Let me just eat my food. Okay, we'll get to Behind Enemy Lines at 45. Let me shorten this little segment up, and thank goodness, because we don't have that much to say about it, Tom, other than the fact that you were surprised.
Sell this, yes.
You will. I'm lowering the bar for you to fall over it. Waze is the thing that I use all the time on my phone in order to get around traffic, to know where cops are so I can speed. And in this case, these campuses, these high-tech campuses in Silicon Valley or Redmond now or in China as well, are so big, so huge. How many square feet are these things?
Well, they mentioned this University Medical Center that's trying this out. It's 26 acres, 3 million square feet, you know, in their campus. When I first heard about this, Waze for Work, it's a Waze-like app on your smartphone. They call them wayfinding apps. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies, you know, Hewlett-Packard, medical centers, are using these. At first I thought, This feels ridiculous. We have a little green button on all of our computers here at Cairo to help identify us if there's suddenly, if Jacob is having a heart attack at his desk and there's an alert that goes off, everyone in the building will be able to know where Jacob's desk is, supposedly, because he's got this green beacon on his computer. Well, none of us. The only time it ever went off was when it was like a false alarm. Something, and nobody knew how the hell is this thing going to work on that. Why do we need apps to direct us around our building? That was before I realized these are 26-acre campuses. That makes some sense. It is like a little city or a town. And the reason this is significant is GPS and satellites cannot penetrate through walls. So you have to have these little, there's something called a MediNav app that's built by a startup that helps hospital workers find indoor destinations, and that's what these can do that GPS can't. They can sort of work through walls, and that's becoming the big new thing. They suggest the main reason for this is for tracking productivity, which seems to me like Big Brother, you know, the management sort of spying on you kind of stuff. It'll help reveal the exact location of workers, and they say that's a good thing if you need people in an emergency, but it also could uncover some awkward things like illicit work romances, perhaps. Hey, what's you know, Larry and Jerry? What are they doing in the closet, the broom closet? It's kind of like they can find where you are.
Look at you going all modern 21st. Larry and Jerry are in there together.
Yeah, that's right. Jerry with a G-E-R-I.
Okay. And I think Jerry or Larry is gender fluid, so we don't know what's going on.
Well, there you go. And that kind of invasion of privacy could raise all sorts of questions. But they are on the rise, these things.
If the boss were following your output, right, wouldn't you naturally dislike the environment of work? If they were tracking your score every single day and comparing it to everyone else to make sure that you are performing at the right level,
you'd feel like a hamster on a wheel, and that hamster's, you know, turning the wheel faster than I am. Yeah, you would feel judged at every second of the day. Especially, it depends on the kind of business. If you're in a widget business, which is you're just producing widgets, that's one thing, because then I think that kind of productivity can be gauged better. In a field like we are, who knows what we're doing to kind of generate. Yes, that's for dang sure. Nobody's judged us
in
years.
Simple. You and I, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Andrew says something. We go to a commercial break. If people listen, then you look at the little ratings thing at the end of the month or whatever. And then the sales guy goes out to the customer. Look how many people listen to Tom and Curly.
Well, then, in effect, we are being looked at every second of the day.
It's true. We have to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll go to Green Bay.
Ah,
talk to this guy. By the way, he is not confident.
He isn't.
He is not. I did a little research.
Wow.
So this is good. We're going to open him up like a soft peanut. All right, right back. All right, let's take care of the things we need to take care of right away. Color of Laura Keel's hair for the big game coming up against Green Bay.
It is white with a touch of pink.
All right, Tom?
At least it's not green and yellow.
Okay, boy, Tom.
Has it been anything besides that?
Hey. Thank you, Andrew.
You're very welcome.
Jacob, you don't pull back the big dusty purple curtain that separates us from the audience with that sort of nonsense.
It has been a different color in the
past. Yes, thank you, Andrew. Thank you. I'm sure the guy from Green Bay is like, what the hell are they talking about?
That's right.
Should we go behind enemy lines? I did a little bit of spying like the Patriots do, Tom.
Uh-huh.
On this guy, Greg Matzik. He is with Packers Radio Network postgame show, and he's also on a reality show. And I looked on that, and I think that's not even interested in talking about. But I went ahead and listened to him on some radio show.
Uh-huh.
And they were asking him, and I got the sense that our guy right now is not so confident in his Green Bay Packers. Matzik, am I correct in my analysis of what you were not saying on that other radio show that I had heard just minutes ago?
Trying to figure out what show I was on or how much I was drinking on the day that show aired.
I'm going to tell you something. You were much funnier on other shows, and this was like two guys and a gal that sounds like a guy, and they were asking you a bunch of questions, and you said you had a list. I got a whole bunch of lists. You know how much I like lists. But then they didn't let you do the list. I thought you were you could have been funnier. You know what I mean?
I just needed my chance. Open the window. Let me in.
That's it. Get him in, coach.
Here's your chance.
All right.
Right now.
So
be funny.
So I got the sense that you are not overly confident on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being like absolutely quaking in your boots, 10 being, oh, this is a surefire thing. Where are you on this when the Seahawks come to town against Green Bay?
So I don't know if you guys are aware, but I got a list
Right? Sorry, we don't have time.
No time for Liz.
God, I've done this on my show already, so it's
all right. All right.
For me,
all right.
New for you.
Okay, go ahead. Do your list.
Reasons to trust the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs and reasons to not trust the Packers in the playoffs.
Okay. Right? Do you need sound? Do you need sound effects? You need rim shots? Do you need kids cheering? Do you need anything?
Any sort of music band your producer could come up with would be great, but okay. I don't want to put anybody on the spot.
No.
Yes, we can do
our
that.
Our producer's groaning as
you
speak.
Go ahead. Start without the music. I'm trying to find it right now. We're a low bed show. Reasons
to trust. We need to go with Benny Hill.
Reasons to trust the Green Bay Packers. Go.
Reason number one, scoring defense, gentlemen. Not bad here, ninth in the NFL. Teams are only scoring a little less than 20 points per game against the Packers. That's a good number. Mm-hmm. It's just not a sexy number because when people talk about the Packers, they talk about Aaron Rodgers and the offense, but the scoring defense has been really good. Okay. They don't turn the ball over. Reason number two, third best turnover margin in the NFL. They can sack the quarterback. Some of the top two defensive rushers in the NFL belong to the Packers. Good kicking game. Red zone offense is there for the Packers. Couple things I don't like, though, and this is where it makes me a little nervous against a Russell Wilson-led Seahawks team. The Packers, can you take a guess here, guys? How many yards do they need to gain on average on a third down to convert a third down?
Well, if it's bad for the Packers, I'd say 7.
It's 8.
8? Wow, that's terrible.
That is tough living. That's terrible. So that means, to me, more opportunities for Russell Wilson on the field. So that makes me a little nervous. The other number that stands out to me that I don't like is fourth quarter scoring. Now, the Packers are among the best in the league at scoring in the first quarter. In fact, only the Patriots and Ravens were better in the first quarter than Green Bay. But in the fourth quarter, that drops down to number 27. And seemingly, that's when Russell Wilson just starts to take it to another level. He can be pedestrian, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it's like, woof, the Seahawks are back in it or running away with things, mm-hmm. and that's what leads me to believe this is going to be a tight game with maybe only a couple of plays really deciding what happens.
Ooh, which would be par for the course. Listen, I always want to ask somebody from Green Bay in this season, when both Green Bay and Seattle were 11-3, some ESPN analyst, might have been a former player, said that he thought that Green Bay and Seattle were the two worst 11-3 teams ever. Seattle went on to prove that by losing the next two home games. You guys won your two games. How bad for a 13-3 team is the Green Bay Packers? That is one of the most stellar records imaginable. How, you know, is it made of clay? Are you made of clay feet, though?
So here's what I think the biggest difference is. In 2014, and it's a game I'd like to get out of my memory bank, but it will not leave my memory bank.
Yes.
The Packers, that was an offensive team, a juggernaut. I think their defense came on at the end of the year and played pretty well in that particular game. But it was more about Aaron Rodgers, and my God, this guy is incredible. Wow. And you wanted no quarterback on your team more than you wanted Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And what has happened here is if Aaron's 36, and instead of him having to play perfect with this offense to win a playoff game, now there's more balance. And I mentioned the sex appeal of watching the Packers is no longer with Aaron Rodgers slinging seeds all across the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's more stuff that doesn't reach the highlight tape. It's that scoring defense. It's stinginess in the red zone and forcing field goals instead of allowing touchdowns. So they're winning in ways that it's just different, I think, to the national crowd. And even folks in Green Bay, it's you're adjusting.
Yeah,
it's not 340 yards, three touchdowns, and then a rushing touchdown for Aaron Rodgers. It's 226 yards, a touchdown, and Aaron Jones running for three scores, and the defense holding a team to under 20 points. I just think it looks different than it has in years past, and that's part of the discussion.
I see.
Before you got that really funny list out, on that other show, you said, and I thought this was really illustrative, you said, I think the Green Bay Packers are third in the NFL for scoring in the first quarter, but they dropped to like 23rd in the fourth quarter for scores. This is the absolute antithesis of the way the Seahawks play. So if you were to line these two things up, it would look like if the Seahawks can just have the game go past the normal amount of time that you need in a fourth quarter, we could win this game.
Overtime.
and I'm sure you guys have been talking about it quite a bit. The Packers are probably the healthiest team in the playoffs right now. I think there is something to that. I mean, Fletcher Cox kind of had his way with the backup center for Seattle in Wild Card Weekend, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it. I think that's a big deal against Seattle is health right now, and, and look, they're pulling out all the stops, and you got to give Schneider credit for what he's trying to put together. It simply hasn't been much of an issue in Green Bay all season long, and I think that's a piece to the puzzle here that is probably overlooked. I think the Packers are certainly the healthier of the two teams, but probably the healthiest team in football left.
Yeah, and the problem is we're a running team first and foremost, and we don't have, you know, our running backs are. We're on the couch 3 weeks ago, but still, no complaining here.
No. Nope. All right, here we go. This is a tradition. We ask this of everybody. Please listen carefully to your choices. You ready? Seahawks appear there at Lambeau Field, Greg, and you are there, of course, as well. As they come off the bus, you get a chance to hit one of them over the head with a frying pan. You get on the back of a horse because it's Green Bay, and why not? You travel with the semi-unconscious Seahawk on the back of the horse, and then you tear their jersey asunder. You put them in a Green Bay Packers jersey to change the outcome of the game. Who do you hit over the head with a frying pan? Can he take anyone he wants, Tom?
Anyone.
Anyone. Who do you take?
DK Metcalf. Not even close.
No!
We just discovered him ourselves.
You can't take DK Metcalf! Oh, my God. We're not even
here's the problem with that.
Yes.
If we're talking a frying pan or a cast iron, he's probably going to do more damage to the pan than the pan's going to do to him.
You're going to have to take the horse, right, and have a horse run him over.
Yeah. So is part of the problem you guys don't have good receivers? Is that part of why Aaron's dropped off a bit, or is it just strictly a matter of age?
The Packers' second leading receiver this year behind Davante Adams, who was the leading receiver despite missing four games. The second leading receiver was Aaron Jones, running back.
Okay.
Third leading receiver was Jamal Williams, backup running back. Uh-huh. Fourth leading receiver was Jimmy Graham. He can't run.
We know all about Jimmy Graham.
There's an issue at wide receiver. Yeah. It's an unsettled position. And look, I get it. Brian Gutekunst put all of his eggs into the free agent basket on defense. Yeah. And that's worked. That's been really good.
Yeah.
But it's Davante Adams, and the Packers do not have, I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
They do not have a wide receiver on their roster who was drafted aside of Davante Adams.
Okay, so here's where we ask you. Ready? What is the final score of the game on Sunday evening?
As much as it pains me to say it for your own audience, it's not being a homer. This is me looking at it objectively, as I must do.
Yes.
I think the Packers win. I do. And I think Russell Wilson has been asked to do so much, and he's been marvelous to watch. He's always fun to watch.
Score! Him, going to the break.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that part. I think it's going to be 31-27.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
man.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Bye.
Go Hawks.